Thank you and good evening. I stand before you as a not in the least bit stressed chief executive. So, well, firstly, thanks to Paul for his review. I think all we chief executives in RC UK really did sincerely welcome the report. We thought it was a great piece of work. He points at a whole range of things that we were absolutely in accord with, so I don't think we have much difficulty generally with the whole thrust of the report. I think what I wanted to do tonight, perhaps, was start the debate a bit about how this might be enacted, because obviously we are, you know, concerned about how the whole thing gets put together. Paul's made it very clear in terms of what objectives need to be achieved, and now it comes to the point where we start to think through how this might be put together. So I'm going to make a few remarks about that. But before I do that, I'll just talk a little bit about the background so that people are sort of uniformly clear about the research councils and what they do, because they are actually quite a big operation. And they're also quite a successful operation, as Paul has rightly pointed out. And again, we welcome that remark in his report, that we're not doing such a bad job. But we do absolutely buy the idea that we can do still better. And it's a question, really, of making sure we put things together that enable us to improve on what we're doing and not take any backward steps. So I think that's where I'd like to sort of send the debate. So a few sort of slides to start with, which sort of describe something about research councils. So Paul rightly mentioned that we're all defined with a mission by a royal charter. I'll say a bit more about that later. It is a big operation when you look at the whole thing. And again, I've just aggregated all the figures from the seven research councils. There's about 770 staff involved in administering the operation. That's obviously the whole grants process, as well as doing administration in institutes that are attached to research councils, and more about that in a moment. Program support, which is folks who get involved in helping deliver the general mission. And actually, there's about 8,000 folks that are actually in institutes delivering research. They're not all researchers, but folks who help directly with research delivery, and of course that's a very significant size of operation. RC UK is the strategic partnership, so it's actually a sort of consenting relationship, if you like, between the seven research councils. I was elected chair back in October. I thought it would be an interesting role to take on at this time, and I haven't been disappointed. But it's just be clear that's the governance arrangements. So in fact, the way this sort of works is that we are all partner organisations to BIS, Department of Business Innovation and Skills, which I think has about somewhere between 45 partner organisations. Estimates tend to vary. Depends on what you count. But there are a lot of them. And so we do number seven of those. So all our reporting lines are directly into Business Innovation and Skills. What you see below those councils are some of the institutes that we run. Again, apologies if there's a laboratory director in the audience whose institute doesn't appear. I've been very nervous about that. Because, for example, EPSRC, my own council, has 115 centres for doctoral training. So we can't put all those on the picture. So there's quite a lot that aren't on the picture, but you get the idea. There's a lot of work that goes on underneath the research councils, and we shouldn't forget that. That's a very important part of delivering science for the UK. So the headline numbers are these, sort of £3 billion budget, when you add all those numbers together, and the numbers that you saw on the slide there were the allocation from last year. We have about 2,500 businesses collaborating at any one time, 1,000 of which are SMEs. So we actually do engage with small and medium enterprises really quite effectively. Again, the EPSRC Centre for Doctoral Training have helped with that quite a bit. 30,000 researchers supported at any one time, 17,000 doctoral students, and 14,000 research staff and fellowships. So this is actually quite a lot going on. 2,500 research grants in any one year. And, of course, I've talked already about the major campuses outside the institutes, outside the councils, rather. As is well rehearsed, we don't spend much on R&D in the UK. And this is the latest data I could get together compared to some comparator nations. You can sort of see that the trends are self-evident. Again, having said that, we were hugely grateful for the government support for science in the last parliament. It could have been a lot worse, and we're hugely grateful for the fact that our allocations are going to go up in real terms over the next 5 years as well. So again, but we must never forget the big picture here, which isn't so helpful looking. The productivity, however, and again, Paul did make this point, is enormously successful. So if you actually look at citations out per dollars in, or pounds in, whatever, you really do see a fantastic performance. So we outstrip the world on that basis, and you can see the sort of data there. And again, these numbers are well rehearsed, 1% of the global population, but 16% of the world's most highly cited papers. So we're both productive and of high quality in the UK. And again, that's down in no small measure to the past work of the research councils. There's no question about that. I always sort of qualify these sorts of pictures with this warning, because you're measuring things long after funding decisions have been made. So it may take a government allocation of funding, and 10 years later you'll get the results. And so let's never forget that when we look at these sorts of numbers. So the whole ethos of Research Councils UK is about excellence with impact. That's our sort of strap line, if you like, that we actually do want to fund really exciting, challenging basic research. We want to make sure discovery science is strong in the UK. History shows that a lot of the great things from science have come from just letting people follow their curiosity, let them follow their intuition. Great things come from it, and I think we must never forget that. But at the same time, there are societal challenges we must also address. We must make sure that we get the balance right between the sort of big picture science problems that are coming out, societal issues that we need to help fix, and get those balances right between basic research and responding to society's challenges. Developing skills, leadership and infrastructure, absolutely critical. So we're feeding PhD qualified folks into the economy, all those numbers of PhD students that are supported into a knowledge-based economy, absolutely critical for the future of the country that we continue that very strong program of doctoral training. And obviously, Paul's alluded to it, that leading the direction of UK research is vitally important, and I think we appreciate we can do more there. Driving innovation. So, again, there's been a huge shift in culture, certainly during my career in academic life, which has really shifted the emphasis onto making sure that we do what we can to support innovation, to turn our great science into economic wealth, and not only in the sort of industries you see there, but right across the creative industries too. Very, very important that we continue to do that. So again, we've got a very strong ethos of working in partnership, and we do an awful lot of co-funded work with bodies that not just from Research Council funded work. Impacts are wide ranging, from flood prediction to policy alleviation. There was a great report that came out on the 6,679 case studies submitted to the REF, the Research Excellence Framework, in 2014. An inspiring read that outlines changes in benefits to the economy, society, culture, public policy and services, health, the environment and quality of life. Paul's already made the point. It's wide ranging in impact. And it's not just economic impact, but clearly that is important, and I think we all understand that very clearly. Actually, we're not doing so badly on that. If you normalise the numbers on the rather small denominator, which is the spend we make on R&D, so you actually see some quite impressive performances when you measure things like invention disclosures per unit R&D expenditure and so forth. My own council did a study of 1,226 case studies submitted to the REF. We measured economic activity. About 80 billion of that we associated with about 7.8 billion spend. Economists in biz do say a net present value of £1 invested gives you about £9.6 in return. So I think there's beginning to be a much stronger evidence base for the fact that investment in science does produce economic benefits too, as well as the broader societal ones. So just another point worth making. Just the last point on the role of the research councils, we have an increasingly important international role. We have offices in Brussels, Beijing, Washington, and Delhi. And again, we're trying to make connections across the world, make our really strong science base work internationally. This will be still more important following the announcement of the Global Challenges Fund by the Chancellor in the autumn statement, a welcome fund where we will work to help research in developing nations that meets overseas development aid, that's ODA criteria. So that's the picture. So that's just a few remarks about the big picture, which I hope convinces you that things aren't so bad. But we do absolutely agree with Paul, as I said, that we could make things better. So we actually got together when I took over the role back in October as chief executives, and we thought we ought to make our own thoughts clear. And we wrote to Joe Johnson, copied it to Paul. And again, thanks to Paul for engaging with us. He was very open about the whole process of his review. We actually had about 3 meetings, I think, in total between Paul and the chief executives. Very, very helpful meetings. And we made a number of points to the minister. So we felt actually retaining the 7 strong science and business-facing identities was important. Quite how we do that is a big issue, but the principle we felt was important. We felt the Haldane principle was also critical. We referenced the 2010 statement of that, which, again, is quite clear and helpful, and it does absolutely point to the fact that some decisions are rightly in the province of ministers, I think we all accept that. So getting that sort of enactment of the principle clear. When it comes to the Research Council, I mentioned the Royal Charter, that the legal identities of the Council is conferred by the Royal Charters, remember? So actually, it's a method of incorporation, having a Royal Charter. So you have a corporate identity, you can start to do agreements with people, employ people, and so on and so forth. So that's a part of that issue. We felt it very important to have clearly delegated authority and accountability for independent management research funding, transparency. We must keep that breadth of support for key disciplines, and stable, predetermined multi-year investment we felt was important too, because we could understand where Paul was going with moving money around, but at the same time we must keep some stability in this and not move stuff too fast to the detriment of that stability. The dual support system, I haven't met anybody who doesn't think the dual support system is a good thing, and we sort of just emphasised that for the avoidance of doubt, as it were, in the letter to Joe. And, of course, peer review we felt important too. So all those points were made. Paul absolutely echoed them in his report, and we are hugely grateful for that. We also started thinking about how we, as Research Council chief executives, thought we should be operating, what good looks like from our point of view. And we did start a new initiative called Research Councils Together, which has got this focus on delivering operational efficiency. That sort of bizarre-looking picture is 7 petals of a flower. We had all sorts of models for this, but we ended up with this one, with a blue core, which is common operations. So we absolutely accept that we should be more efficient in terms of delivering the organisational efficiency by having things like finance, HR, IT, all those sorts of things that any sensible organisation would centralise, we will do. We're also clear that there's certain things that stain the petals, the red bits. But we do have a purple zone. You're not colourblind out there, but there's that ring around there. There are some things that we're uncertain about as yet. We're working through this. We're trying to work out, actually, do we need to have that in the petals or in the core and put our organisational structure together. So we're doing this anyway, okay? Irrespective of any other decisions. We will deliver this as research councils. Clearly, multidisciplinary research, we completely accept we need to do better at. I mean, we're not doing badly, again. There's lots of great examples of multidisciplinary initiatives that I could recite, but we do understand the point Paul makes about that. So we'll work on that too. So those are the current arrangements. And as I said, the Royal Charter defines the legal personality, as the lawyers say, of those organisations. They are corporate bodies whose council members have corporate responsibility for them. It's a bit like being a director of a company. So in my experience, we have very strong governance in the research councils. My own council, I'm hugely proud of. I think they're a great organisation, a great body. People who are really eminent people who come and contribute enormously to the success of the organisation. I think that's a very important factor to be considered in all this. But once you've got that Royal Charter and you've got that legal personality, then you basically do a deal. You have an agreement with the with BIS, and that's in the management statement. That's 54 pages long, and the financial memorandum, which is 28 pages long. So all the details are in those documents. The charters simply incorporate you as a legal entity and tell you what your mission is. The corporate responsibilities of council members are defined in the code of practice, and in my experience, council members take this very seriously, and as I said, contribute enormously to the operation of the council. Not only that, but there's a huge community that contribute to the operation of the councils, people who do peer review, people who sit on strategic advisory teams, strategic advisory networks. All councils do this slightly differently, but we all have immensely strong engagements with our communities. And we have big communities. EPSRC has 10,000 folks out there who would like to get EPSRC grants. So again, just remember some of these important features of what goes on at the moment. So those are the current arrangements. The arrangements under consideration, and you can see Dougal said the devil could well be in the details of this, and I think that's what the concern is. That Paul rightly wants to make better sense, strategic sense, of how all this works together, and I think I absolutely share his view on that. We do need to do this better. There's a possibility of having Innovate UK as part of that family. There's a possibility of having the QR part of HEFCE as part of that family. So all these things are under consideration and need to be thought through very carefully, I think. And there are undoubtedly some opportunities, and I think in Chapter 4 of Paul's report, he points these out. Strengthen strategic thinking, a better engagement, operational policies that are effective, optimised, simplified and common, and I think we'd all sign up to that. Strengthen support, I've already mentioned, multidisciplinary interdisciplinary research, we need to do better. Redistribution of among councils, support for emerging fields, strengthening the leadership, enabling perhaps more time to spend thinking about science. I think we'd all sign up to that. The better coordination with other stakeholders across the research landscape, including Innovate and HEFCE, of course. Not that we don't talk to them. We do absolutely do already have good relationships with our partner organisations in that part of the world. So I thought we'd just actually just go down this list, and we've had some thoughts among the chief executives about responding to these opportunities and just sort of risks that we must mitigate is the way to put it. So for example, strengthen strategic. Absolutely, let's think about a strong strategy, but let's not forget the discovery science. Let's get that balance right. There's a sort of a Goldilocks solution or something that gets the balance about right. Operational policies that are effective, optimised and simplified, but let's not stifle innovation. One of the great things the research councils do is, yes, they invent new ideas and give things a try. And we don't want to stop that. We don't want to end up with a plethora of schemes that no one understands, fully accept that. But at the same time, we've got to be careful not to just shut down all the innovative work that my colleagues in the research councils do get involved in. Multidisciplinary research, yes, absolutely, but let's not forget the core disciplines. Let's make sure we keep good, strong core disciplines, because you can't do interdisciplinary research if you don't have strong core disciplines. It's sort of simple as that, and I think we must bear that in mind too. Let's not go overboard. Redistribution, I've already made this point, I think. We've got to be careful about this. Long-term budgets, planning and investment, flexibility and agility, all these things go with an allocated budget that you can then, with some discretion, and it's up to about £10 million, I think, technically, we can actually, as chief executives, decide to invest or do useful things out there in the community, should we choose to do so. So let's not hamstring ourselves too much with that. Strengthening Research Council leadership, but we've got to watch that we don't throw away our currently strong governance arrangements. I particularly feel that's important because of the, frankly, large sums of public money at stake here. We're actually devolving quite large chunks of money, as you've seen, and making sure those are well governed, and that goes with that responsibility, corporate responsibility of council members, I think. And of course, we don't want to get this wrong and actually increase bureaucracy, because there's another layer here, and so there's a risk. I'm not saying it's not going to work, but we've just got to bear in mind very carefully not to end up inventing ourselves a new bureaucracy that makes things worse. I mean, they're not terrible now, I've got to be honest. Okay, so there, you know, there is some, of course, but there, it's not debilitating by any means. Better coordination with stakeholders, innovate. I mean, there are some bigger issues around that in terms of the QR part of HEFCE, for example. You know, separating research and teaching, that's clearly an issue. Not for us so much to comment on. There's a consultation underway that will doubtless tease out some of these things. And Innovate UK does have a mission beyond the higher education sector, so let's not forget that either, that they are there to try and stimulate growth across the economy, work with industry and business. So there's a risk that if you put them in the same family, that their mission gets diverted. So that's a risk to be aware of and mitigated. You know, we don't want to end up there. Finally, of course, if you do make a big change, there's a risk to business continuity, and we've got to manage this extremely carefully if we're going to make a big change. Not saying we're against it, absolutely not, but we've just got to think through exactly how it's done and what we do in order to deliver what Paul wants and rightly suggests we should have. We've got to be very careful about that. So that's where we are. Where are we now in this whole process? We need to do a proper appraisal of the options in terms of what the governance structure might look like. I think we need to write down the alternatives, what's legally doable, focus on ensuring that the current excellence is not inadvertently compromised by organisational change. So, you know, again, there's just the risk of getting it wrong if you don't tackle these things carefully. We've put, in fact, this is a set of bullet points that are in our response, our formal response to the call for the consultation and the Higher Education Green Paper, and how policy is informed through engagement with stakeholder communities. That's an issue for us. How do we actually, at the moment, we're all comfortable about the way our missions are developed through conversations with our communities. Clarity and accountability for providing advice to government, how that works in the future. Paul made the point, there's, you know, lots of advice going up. How do we fix that? Again, the funding I talked about already. The delegated authority, how that works, especially for those with institutes and centres, those councils that have big operations out there, have to worry about that. Legal and governance instruments, all that needs to be sorted out. And I think really, these things we have to work through with BIS in the forthcoming months in order to deliver what Paul, I think, rightly suggests is an improvement in the current situation. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you.